Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this segment of the Horsemanship Journey. Today we bring you a story of grit, determination, and hope. Today's guest is Eric McIlvaney. Eric earned a mechanical engineering degree from the United States Naval Academy while preparing for his service as a Marine Corps infantry officer. Eric deployed 3 times as a Marine, and on his final tour in Afghanistan, he was wounded after stepping on an IED. Eric suffered the amputation of his right leg below the knee, a life-changing opportunity that began his next journey as an athlete and speaker. Eric had the privilege to represent Team USA in triathlon in the 2020 Tokyo Paralympics. He has finished eight full Ironman races and now raced over 50 other races. Eric, thank you so much for taking your time to join us here on the Horsemanship Journey today.
Hey, you're welcome. You're welcome. Thanks for having me. Thanks for the introduction.
Right on. Well, that was a pretty kind of a short introduction. I was wondering if you could just tell us a little bit more about your story for those who might yet have not heard about you quite yet from, back from even from beginning to join the military. Just tell us about where it began.
Yeah. So I guess I start in eighth grade. In eighth grade, I had to do a career research report. What do you want to be when you grow up? It was for eighth grade English. And we weren't allowed to do this report on being a professional athlete. And I loved sports. I played all kinds of sports. So that was like my first couple choices, you know, it was my first 9 choices being a professional athlete. And then I had to choose something different. So I wasn't sure. I went home and I asked my parents, all right, what do you think I should write this report on? And my dad said, the military, you should write it on being in the military. And just what jumped into my head immediately was, from the commercials that I saw on TV, was the United States Marine Corps. You know, I thought that they, in the mid 80s, when I was making this huge life decision, they had the best commercials to be one of the few, the proud, the Marines. And that just that jumped out to me. And I'm like, all right, there it is. I'll do my report on the Marine Corps. And I did that report. We had to do the research. You know, I went to a recruiter to get some more information. I went to the library and I realized, like, wow, what the Marines represent, just the rich history and the stories of valor and heroes and sacrifice. I knew that I wanted to be a part of that. So that's where it started. I decided in the eighth grade that I was going to be a Marine when I grew up. So I started to look up to our military veterans. And definitely look at them in a different way as the men and women that I wanted to exemplify. So, you know, through high school, I continued to work hard in school and on the sports fields. And my grandpap, he's an Army veteran. He served in Korea, and he guided me towards the United States Naval Academy. You know, out of the Naval Academy, depending on the needs of the military, about 20 to 25%. Of graduates become Marine Corps officers. And so he guided me that way, said I could keep playing sports, get an education, and then become a Marine and become a Marine officer through there. So I was like, all right, let's do it. And I went there, played some rugby, studied mechanical engineering, which ended up being one of the best decisions of my life. And I mean, I've never really worked as an engineer, but that's where I met my wife. She was also a student studying mechanical engineering. So I met her and started going to her for help in my coursework because I thought she was really cute. So that was my strategy. And we graduated. She became an officer in the Navy. I became an officer in the Marine Corps. A lot happened really quickly. We had our first daughter and, we got married, moved out to the West Coast and started deploying. So we did 5 overseas deployments. And it was my last deployment was the trip to Helmand Province, Afghanistan, where I was injured. So that's kind of the backstory of how I got into the military and how I ended up a Marine.
Well, from there, so you're in Afghanistan, were you excited? It seems like you kind of reached your goal and it seems like things were going pretty good. You're married and kind of living the things that are going how you want. What happened next?
Yeah, so I was serving in Afghanistan. I had a kind of a unique job. So I was an infantry officer. So usually you have a unit full of Marines, but this was a unique job where I had four Marines, to include myself. Actually, three Marines and a Navy corpsman. He was part of our group. I always just call him a Marine. He was tough, awesome guy. But our job was, we embedded into an Afghan Army infantry company of about 120 soldiers. And our job was to advise them and train them during combat operations. And we were with them supposed to be a 7-month deployment. We were with them about 3.5 months. And a little past the halfway mark, my life changed, right? It was December 9th in 2011, went on a patrol. And on this patrol, I triggered an IED explosion, an improvised explosive device. So like I stepped on it, it was hidden in the ground, and it triggered the explosion underneath me, which led to the amputation of my right leg and some damage on my left leg and my arm. And I remember the experience vividly. You know, just a violent force picked me up and threw me to the ground, and my ears were ringing. You know, a very high-pitched ringing sound. Like I didn't even hear the explosion. It was more like a pop, and then my ears were ringing, and life was in slow motion. And I didn't know what had happened. I was conscious, but I had a concussion. I was dazed. I didn't know what was going on. And slowly things were coming back to me. You know, I felt a wetness on my left leg. I didn't feel any pain. I could smell chemicals, and then suddenly, you know, I tried to open my eyes, and you know, it was all dusty and dirty. And I'm like, okay, wait a second. I'm in Afghanistan. I'm laying on my back, and I was looking into the sky, and you know, a second earlier, it's a beautiful blue sky without a cloud in it, and now it's full of smoke and dust. And then I realized, like, oh my goodness, I just stepped on an IED. And I knew it. I knew that, because that was the weapon that we saw over and over again. And I was like, man, I stepped on an IED. And I knew that I was bleeding on my left leg up pretty high. And I still at that point really didn't feel anything. I didn't feel the pain yet. And for a moment, I thought I might be dying. And there were two thoughts went through my head. I thought like I was going to get to go to heaven. And it was like acceptance. I don't know if I prepared myself for this, but you know, I'm a Christian and I think heaven is an amazing place. So I'm thinking about that. And then all of a sudden I pictured my wife and my daughter's face and I got scared. There were still things on this earth I wanted to do. And I remember at this point, I'm thinking about them. And then my corpsman, our Navy corpsman, came running up to me and started taking care of me, you know, because that's what we do. We take care of each other. And then the Marines in the area and everyone got me out of there. They got me out of there, a helicopter ride to the hospital, went into surgery, woke up after surgery, missing my right leg, about 5 inches below my knee, bandages all up and down my left leg and my arm. And, you know, that was a day that my life changed. And, yeah, it was the end of that journey, and it's the start of a whole new journey and a whole new opportunity.
What were your thoughts as you in the hospital, realizing that your leg was gone, and what was going through your head at that point?
Yeah, there is a lot. You know, I was going. It was kind of like an emotional roller coaster, and I remember on the helicopter, just some of the emotions that were going through me. And first, I remember just being so angry at myself. You know, we aren't supposed to step on IEDs. You know, I should have saw the sign. I should have seen that. I was a captain in the Marine Corps. You know, I was a senior ranking guy on the ground down there, and I was the one that stepped on this IED. So I was like mad at myself, a little bit embarrassed that I did. And then the weird sensation, like I felt relief. You know, I was fighting this war in Afghanistan and leading this team, and it was challenging. And I didn't realize how heavy this burden was. Just one, the burden of leadership, and then two, just really, I took this mission seriously, trying to get our Afghan counterparts to really take over the responsibility of securing the district that we were in. And when I was flying out of there, I felt relief. It's like, oh my goodness, like my war in Afghanistan's done. My fight's done. Like I don't have to worry about that anymore. And then when I realized I was thinking about that, I felt guilty, because now my guys, my team of four is down to three, and they're still going to have to step up and finish this mission for the next 3.5 months. So now I felt guilty, and I was just going back and forth from this to that. And, you know, going into surgery, I wake up and I'm in the hospital, and still like, I'm grateful. I was grateful that I was alive. I was scared of the unknown. Like I was missing a leg. I didn't know what that looked like. I was scared how my daughter was going to react to that. You know, I didn't know what my wife was going to think of that. I was in and out of pain, in and out of surgery. So it was, there was just a lot going on, and it was kind of almost like an emotional chaos for days, really trying to figure out what was next.
I can imagine. I mean, I can't imagine, but it makes sense hearing that you must have had a myriad of emotions going on. I heard you mentioned that at one point, I think you said it was in the hospital, you got an email from a superior or something that they might have mentioned a marathon or something. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah. So my commanding officer, Ike Moore, he was a major at that time, and he was in Afghanistan. I had made it back to a hospital, the Naval Medical Center in San Diego at this point. I finished up my fifth surgery. That was probably going to be my last one. Things were starting to go in a good direction. This is probably close to 2 weeks after my injury. And, he was communicating with my family a little bit and with me just through email. And he sent me an email, and I was laying in my hospital bed, and I opened it up and I was reading this email, and it said, "Hey, Eric, let me know when you're going to run your first marathon." And that was it. You know, that was the email. And I remember thinking to myself, like, you know, what a jerk. Why would you say that? But also, I knew what he was doing. He knew what I needed to hear to get motivated to stop worrying about what it is that I cannot do anymore and focus on what I can and get out there and set a goal, put my best foot forward, you know, even if I only had one foot, and start pushing through. And he challenged me at running a marathon. So that's when I decided that I wanted to one up it. And I set a goal to run an Ironman triathlon. You know, in an Ironman, you swim 2.4 miles, you ride your bike 112 miles, and then you run a marathon. So I was going to show him, right, you know, the 26.2 mile run. So it's 140.6 total. And I set this goal. It felt almost impossible, you know, and I'll tell you, like, I figured there was other races that I can do and that I could finish, but this Ironman, I didn't know. I knew that I was taking on a tall task, something that really inspired me. And that's why, like, I ask people all the time, do you have a goal right now that inspires you? Because when you have that goal, when I set this goal and it inspired me, thinking about being on that course and doing the training and everything that it was going to take, like, I was inspired. It was reason for me to get out of bed in the morning each day, you know, to get after it and to go to my appointments and the physical therapy and just to be the best person that I could be to take down this goal. And, you know, I just had a wonderful group of people around me, with my family and friends, and just a support network that that helped us start really moving towards that task. But it was kind of neat, you know, this journey started with a simple email from someone who cared about me enough to challenge me. He cared about me enough to challenge me. And that's, you know, when people challenge us, they care about us. Cause when we face a little bit of pressure and challenge and adversity, we grow, we get better. And I think that should be our goal all the time, to always be growing and getting better, getting more educated.
There's a couple of things in that I just wanted to touch on. One is that the, you know, what may have seemed a small little thing at the time from him, as far as his effort, had such a tremendous impact. Even so, I mean, to impact our listeners and viewers today and all the thousands and potentially millions of people that you've been able to inspire in your life and everything else from that one little act is actually incredible. But just go back another half a step, because I have a question, because I'm visualizing me and I'm looking and thinking about things that I would consider are much less devastating than having an amputation, having my leg amputated, and thinking that, you know, I'm just kind of mad and kind of feeling sorry for myself and just I don't know, just having, did you have any thoughts like that before, or did this goal just move you right towards it?
Oh, I'm human. I definitely had those thoughts as well. And I'll tell you, like, that was the first week or two before I had that goal, I just kept running it, rerunning the whole day in my mind, that whole morning, waking up, going on the patrol, like where I went wrong, what did I do wrong, like almost trying to change the past. And finally, like when he challenged me and I set a goal, it's like, you know what, I can't change the past, can't change it, but I can affect the future, and that's what I'm going to do right now. Like, done thinking about that, I'm not going to worry about it. But, you know, day in and day out, like I have bad days sometimes, you know, I have to remind myself, like, okay, I've been through worse. I can, you know, I can get past this small situation here. And it's one thing that I use that helps me out a lot is I just try to remind myself of the things that I'm grateful for. And my daughter actually taught me this after my injury. Such a simple thing, but when I was injured, my wife told her, and she was in kindergarten. She was 5 years old, and she sat her down before, my daughter's name is Lupe, before Lupe was going off to school, she sat her down and told her, and Lupe responded really quickly. She said, you know, she said, well, when is daddy coming home? Like, my wife said, daddy got hurt at work and he lost one of his legs and he's going to be coming home. So her response was, when is daddy coming home? And my wife said, in about a week. You know, that was the kind of the time frame that the Marine Corps gave her. And this is in December. And my daughter's smart, I guess. And she took about 10 seconds to process all of the information. And then she smiled. And she said, daddy's going to be home for Christmas. And I thought that was so cool, because it was such a negative event for me and my wife and my parents and my friends, and my little five-year-old daughter just so purely pulled something positive from the situation. And I just knew immediately, like, she was the person I wanted to be around, you know? And I realized also, like, you know, it's a kid's way of thinking, but when do we lose that kid's way of thinking? Like, when it leaves us at some point. And what she did was so simple. That was just her being grateful for what she had. Like, she saw that. She still had her father, and she knew that, and she was grateful for it. And I'm like, wow, that's simple. That's so simple. Like, I have a lot to be grateful for. I'm grateful that I'm still alive. I'm grateful that I still get to be her father. I'm grateful that I still have my left leg. You know, I lost my right one. I got my left one. I didn't used to like my left one until I lost my right one. Now I love it. You know, I'm grateful that I had all the prosthetics that I have. You know, I have a running blade and a cycling leg. Like, the technology and prosthetics is awesome. I'm definitely grateful that I had the privilege to serve in our country. You know, that's something I wanted to do, and I'm just grateful to be on the journey. So when I'm having a rough day, like, that's where I go. I go, like, okay, what, you know, where am I blessed? Where have I been blessed? And how can I be grateful for that? And that puts things in a different perspective. And, you know, there's things that we can all be grateful for. So that's what I tell people, is like, you know, when you wake up, think of like two or three things that you're grateful for, and that starts your day strong. And when you have gratitude in your life, a resilient person has gratitude and is able to be grateful for the things in their life. And someone who's going to get out there and reach goals, like, first, it starts with gratitude. So I think it starts with gratitude.
That is awesome. Gratitude is good for resilience. That's super powerful. And your daughter's thought, I mean, of all the millions of thoughts that she could have had, I mean, what a super reminder of, you know, the first initial thought is you're going to be there for Christmas. I mean, that's just super amazing. That's awesome. Eric, I heard you. I watched the video not too long ago here, and you were also telling a story about your daughter when you were issued a placard and you went to the store. And I was wondering if you could recount that story about the handicap placard.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it's a fun story. And it's Lupe again, my daughter. I think everyone should go out and rent a five-year-old for a couple days if you don't have one, just to remind you, because they tell you how it is, and she helped teach me a lesson and remind me of something that I was doing that was kind of holding me back. And so it starts when I was at the hospital. I was given a handicap placard, which makes sense, right? You know, I just lost my leg, but I was stubborn. I was prideful. I wasn't ready to be handicapped yet. You know, I was kind of fresh off the battlefield. I threw that thing in the garbage, And I don't know what happened for the next couple of months. I must have just complained a lot or something. And I got another one in the mail. I don't know if that first one expired and they just automatically sent me another one, but I grabbed it. And I was living in San Diego and driving a truck. And I swear some of the parking spots in San Diego are a little bit smaller. So I'm going to keep this handicap placard. I put it in my glove box, you know, for a rainy day. And then I realized it doesn't rain in San Diego. So I started using it on sunny days too. And I'd pull into work and it's like, wow, it looks like a pretty far walk. I think I'm going to be handicapped today, you know? And I'd park into my spot and put up my placard and kind of start limping in. Like, hey, I got the leg thing going on if anyone's curious. And one day I was with Lupe and I had never used it around anyone else. It was just my own thing. But I pulled into the grocery store and there was no parking anywhere and I just didn't want to deal with it. So I drove up, pulled in or zipped to the front of the store and pulled into a handicap spot. And I opened a glove box and I grabbed my placard and I hung it up in the rearview mirror. And I'm like, Lupe, let's go. And we get out of the truck and we start walking into the store. And she says, Dad, what was that magic blue ticket? And I'm like, oh, that. Well, because Daddy only has one leg, I'm allowed to park right there when I use that magic blue ticket. That's for people like me. And without missing a beat, she says, but Dad, you have 5 legs. You have your running leg, your biking leg, you have your water leg, your walking leg, and your left leg. And I remember her saying that, and I'm thinking to myself, yeah, you're right, I do. I have a little bit of an advantage sometimes. And I'm walking into the store, and I'm like, let's go, you know, little brat. You know, I'm walking through the aisles, and I was feeling guilty. I realized, like, I was using my leg as an excuse when it was convenient for me. And it wasn't just with parking. It was with other things. It was with training. Like, I'd go on a run with some buddies, and if they were going a little bit too fast for my liking, you know, I'd say, hey, you guys keep going. I got my leg thing going on, you know, I'll stop and fix this. And I realized, wow, I was using my leg as an excuse, and it was holding me back from reaching my potential. And that day, walking through the store, I made a promise to myself that I will never use this stupid leg as an excuse again. And it was the most freeing thing that I had ever done. It's like, now I just had to figure it out. If I had trouble running, or if I had trouble climbing this, or my daughter wanted to go skiing, can I get this foot into a ski? You know, like, you just have to figure it out. This is not an excuse to not do something. It's not an excuse to stop running. Yeah, this is not an excuse to park somewhere way closer. And I have nothing against handicap parking, but I was training for an Ironman at that point, right? You know, I had run 6 miles that day, and now, like, I'm using this leg as an excuse. So she taught me an important lesson. She opened my eyes up to something that I was doing that was holding me back. And it was just using this leg as an excuse. And I share it with you because, you know, we all have excuses. And, you know, the next time you're going to use that excuse, you can ask yourself, like, what is this holding me back from reaching? And also, like, all right, if I don't use excuse, like, what am I going to gain from it? Like, you know, if I go and do this task, maybe it's something simple, like getting up and, maybe you're trying to write a book, getting up and writing for 30 minutes, like, but you're tired, you know, but I'm going to use this excuse. Like, I'm tired and I had a long day. Well, if you don't use the excuse, what are you going to get closer to doing? Well, you're going to get closer to finishing that book. So again, it's all about putting your best foot forward and being the best version of you. And when we have excuses in our life, you know, that holds us back from reaching our potential.
That is a fun story and a powerful story. Eric, if you would, just go back to, you've got these prostheses now, I guess, and you want to talk a little bit about that, and then the road to get into your first race and you know, the conditioning and then how it all went on your first race.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, so after my injury, I had that goal to run an Ironman, but there were mornings that I couldn't even get out of bed, right? I was in pain and I was trying to come off of, like, this pain medication so I can be more independent, and I was coming off it too quick and it was just hard. So, like, I couldn't focus on that Ironman for, you know, there are certain days I couldn't. And that's why we had to break this big goal into milestones. And milestone one was learning to walk. So 2 months after my injury, you know, after work and after strengthening my core and doing physical therapy, we finally put on that first prosthetic leg and started walking. And then I had to learn how to swim. And when we compete, I swim without my leg. So I go clockwise, you know, like aim left to go straight, but you know, we figure it out. I learned how to run, learned how to bike. And then my first actual race was 8 months after the injury, and it was just a sprint triathlon. So we're trying to get to this Ironman, but again, that's just a milestone. A sprint triathlon is like an hour to an hour and a half long race instead of an all day race. So again, like we did it, did that first race in the first year. I was able to compete in 3 different triathlons, and they were getting a little bit longer each one. And I ran my first marathon. I ran the Marine Corps Marathon in Washington, D.C., which is an awesome, awesome race. And then that second year, I got a call from organization. It was Refuel Got Chocolate Milk. And they were marketing chocolate milk as a recovery drink for athletes because chocolate milk has all the necessary nutrients, minerals, and proteins that our body needs to recover after a hard workout. I was under contract to say that, so it rolls off the tongue. But they said, Eric, we're going to go compete. We're putting together a team to compete at the Ironman World Championships. We saw what you did last year. Do you want to be part of that team? And I said, yes. So I'm part of this team. There are 4 athletes, 4 of us. And cool for me, like I'm from Pittsburgh. I live in Pittsburgh again. So I'm a Steelers fan when it comes to the football. And Hines Ward, he's a retired Pittsburgh Steeler. He was one of the members of our team as well. And just an awesome guy. He's a future Hall of Fame wide receiver, just great. So he was going to be doing this journey as well and finishing the Ironman. And, you know, we had about 8 months from when that was named to get ready for this Ironman. And in that 8 months, we did a couple more races. I think 3 half Ironmans, a couple more sprint triathlons, and then the big race came. The Ironman World Championships is in Kona, Hawaii, and it's usually the second weekend of October, and went out and did the race, and it was long day, long race, but we were able to come across that finish line 11 hours and 54 minutes. There was a point that I didn't know if I was going to finish. There was a point 8 miles from the finish line where I was sitting on the ground. I had my leg off. My limb was swollen. I was out of energy. Like the wheels were falling off. And I had to remind myself, like, okay, you're here. You're going to finish this race. Like, you're a Marine. We don't quit. Like, let's figure this out. And I was able to get that leg back on, thinking about all the people that were supporting me and just coming across that finish line. And it was such a cool experience. It was 22 months from when I set that goal to when I was able to cross that finish line. And I did, became an Ironman and continued racing just because, you know, I just love, I love that sport where you just put your body to the test, you know, put your body to the test. You're not sure if you could finish. It's like putting your body to that limit. And it's both physical and mental. And I just, man, I love it. I love that. I love the challenge. I love the challenge.
Eric, some of us, I wondered if you just might talk a little bit about, you know, that point. I think you said it was 8 miles out. And like, what was going through your head? And really, how did you get yourself to, I understand, like your leg swelled up and you couldn't get your leg back on. And it seemed like everything was going bad. And to redirect your thoughts to make it happen, I think a lot of us get in those positions and it's just too easy to quit, you know, and not. But could you just touch on, you know, how that, exactly what was going through your head and how you kind of got back in the game?
Yeah. Yeah. And I got to be honest with you. Like, I thought about quitting and I don't quit much. Like, I don't quit a lot of things, but I just remember this feeling and it's like, oh my goodness, like that finish line seems so far from here. And in my head, it's like, man, I need an excuse to get out of this thing. Like, I wanted to give up. But at the same time, I knew at the end of that day, I was going to look in the mirror and could I really, you know, and ask myself that question, Eric, like, Eric, did you leave everything out there? Did you try as hard as you could to get to that finish line? And if I would have quit, but I did try as hard as I could to get to that finish line, like, I'd have been okay with it, you know, but I knew I had more in me. And I thought through it. I was like, okay, I made a decision. I'm not quitting. All right. I'm going to get to that finish line. So like the question became, the question was not, am I going to finish this race? The question became like, how am I going to finish this race? Right. So like that was gone, finishing it no matter what. All right. And how am I going to do it? Like that's, we can ask ourselves that question. Like when we're struggling and there's a challenge or an obstacle or some adversity in front of us, it's like, how am I going to get past it? How am I going to do that? That's when we're in problem solving mode. So it's like, okay, how am I going to do this? And now my mind was engaged with how can I get from here to the finish line and not how can I come up with an excuse of why not to finish? So my mind was engaged with something healthy and I'm thinking through it. It's like, I have to get my leg back on. My limb was swollen because I had taken my leg off. My limb was swollen. I needed calories. So like I was just doing one thing at a time and everything that I did got me a little bit closer to the finish line. I ate a peanut butter sandwich that gave me calories so I could get energy. I elevated my limb. I laid back, I let my heart rate come down. That helped some of the swelling come out. And eventually I was able to get my leg back on. You know, then I was able to stand up. Then I was able to walk. And I'm just walking one foot in front of the other. And my leg wasn't all the way on yet. But like it was just, what can I keep doing? What can I do next to get a little bit closer to that finish line? And as long as I was moving in that direction, then like I knew things were good. So I was engaged mentally. I was engaged physically and I was engaged on the process of, all right, you know, what's next to get me closer to that finish line instead of, all right, should I try to quit this thing? And like, I could be in my bed and in an hour and comfortable. So, you know, I just kept doing that one thing after the other. And next thing I knew I was jogging and I was back in it. And that's when I knew it. And I'll never forget that feeling coming close to that finish line with the people lining the streets. And they were yelling and they had cowbells and they were screaming and cheering me on. Like that's when I realized like that was worth it. You know, thinking through that whole process and taking it one step at a time. And it was worth it because I got to that finish line and it felt so good. I remember coming across that finish line thinking, oh, like I almost don't remember it. Now my wife was there. I gave her a big hug. It was more than a race to me, right? This thing was, it was personal. This was me proving to myself something, right? And I just, it felt so good to cross that finish line.
That is so awesome and powerful. Just that when I hear you talk about the, you know, moving from how am I not going to do this or how's that all going to go to just eliminating that from your thought process, that's no longer an option, and then taking those steps. I mean, that's super excellent advice, I think. It's just that, and yeah, white power. Thank you for that. And I mean, just to see the adversity, that moment and all the moments to be able to accomplish the things that you've done, you really are a inspiration for some of us, that for all of us. We appreciate your time. Last thoughts, what would you like to leave us with today? Anything that we kind of missed in the conversation about you that, what would you like to leave us with today on the horsemanship journey?
You know, like I was asked a question, you know, when I go out and speak and I share to a bunch of different audience, could be a corporation or an association or a school. And I was at a high school and this was early on in my injury. And I had a student ask me, if you can go back to the day you were injured, what would you change? And I remember, you know, at first I was like, well, maybe I wouldn't step right there. You know, that kind of hurt. I'll go around it. And I thought about it and I really had to put some time thinking about it. Like, what would I change? If I could go back, would I change it? And I realized, one, like, I wouldn't want to go through that pain again, physically and emotionally. It was a hard time, not just the incident, but like the months that followed it for myself, for my family, for my friends. Like, it was hard. It was definitely hard. But I realized what my priorities were through this thing. And I realized what they are when I think back to the day that I was injured. You know, I stepped on that IED and there was a moment that I thought I might be dying. And two thoughts went through my head. First, I thought I was going to get to go to heaven. And then I thought about my wife and my daughter. And I realized those are the two things that I think about when I think I might be dying. Those must be the two most important things in my life, my faith and my family. And am I living according to those two priorities? And, you know, I had to make some rudder steers to get on track. And I still have to make sure that I'm staying on track. But when my priorities are in line, then everything else seems to fall in place. So I guess that's it. That's what I want to leave with people with is, you know, what are your priorities? What are your priorities? Are you living according to your priorities? And what do you need to do to get on track? And I just want to remind you, what are you grateful for? Right? Maybe write it down. But, you know, every day, like I look at a picture of my family and I'm just absolutely grateful for them. So that helps me. That helps me continue to push forward.
Awesome. That is such great advice. We appreciate your thoughts. I think you've gained a few thousand, potentially a few million more fans to be cheering you on as you continue. What's the best way to reach you if people are interested in having you speak and learn more about you? Where do we find you?
How you can find me, my website is my name, www.ericmcilvenny.com. And then I'm on social media just as my name, like the handle is Eric McIlvenny on Instagram and Facebook. And I don't always do a great job of keeping those updated because I'm out training and getting ready for the next event, but I'll try to do a better job because right now we're trying to qualify for the Paris Paralympics in the sport of triathlon. So I'm going to do a lot of racing in the next year and try to get there because my wife wants to go to Paris and I want to see the Eiffel Tower with her. Yeah. So that's our next goal. But thank you so much for having me on. It's been wonderful.
You're very welcome. We wish you continued success. We'll be there cheering you on, ladies and gentlemen, Eric McIlvenny.